Hey, home theater nerds, welcome to the Bright Side Home Theater Podcast, the home theater podcast that's all about the experiences, the sights, the sounds, the scenes. And this week's sights, sounds, and scenes, we're going to be talking about The Batman, dropped in 4K here in the United States. And I brought in my buddy, my new buddy, Ralph Potts, who I've been talking to for quite a while trying to set this up. That's the first thing we hit on, is how difficult it is in this, you know, world to get together, but we finally did. What a great subject, too. Before we get to The Batman and his review of The Batman, we talk about him, how he started in home theater, talk about his home theater, which is amazing, spoilers, and have a great time. And then we move on into talking about The Batman, all spoiler-free, all talking about the 4K experience. You don't have to worry about any kind of spoilers or anything. Just talking about the overall 4K experience and how great it is and what a piece of art. If you want any more information on Ralph, all the links are in the show notes, AVS Forum, links to his reviews, stuff like that. So check that out. Links for myself are down there as well. But I will also be back after the sit down with Ralph. I'm going to give you my much anticipated by more people than I ever imagined, my review of The Batman in 4K disc and 4K on the Kaleidoscape. So stick around for that if you're interested. But without further ado, let's get in and sit down with Ralph.
This is Bright Side Home Theater.
Ralph Potts, it's been a long time coming. We've DM'd back and forth for how many months now?
I don't know. It's been quite a few. Probably 6 months?
Yeah.
Months, something like that.
Yeah. Just trying to set this up. You know, you're a busy man. Good for you.
Oh, please. I know I'm not the only one who's busy. You're busy, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it's all fun. It's all
fun. Yeah, it's all good stuff.
Yeah. So I really, really want to get to know you. I want my listeners to get to know you because we all know Ralph Potts. Everybody loves Ralph Potts reviews. Everybody. But I want to get to know, like, your start in home theater. We haven't had that conversation yet. I wanted to know how you got into home theater. And the question I always ask, I usually save it for the end, but I'm going to open with it. I want you to include, if it's possible, do you have an origin movie that got you into home theater as well? Like, I have Star Wars, A New Hope, but I didn't know if you had that as well. But how did you get started in this whole home theater thing?
Well, I've always been interested in movies. I mean, growing up, my mother loved movies. So my parents divorced when I was young. So, just my mom and I, you know, as I got into my formative years, would spend time watching movies, mostly, you know, stuff that she liked, but, you know, newer stuff too. And so I've always had an interest in movies, but the movie that that probably made me interested in how good movies could sound and how good movies could look was Star Wars: A New Hope.
Really?
1977. Oh yeah, 1970. Well, it wasn't called A New Hope. It was Star Wars.
You know? Exactly. That's why I always call it that. So yeah. Okay.
1977. I'm 13 years old, and this movie is like going crazy at the theaters. So I go with some friends, and all I remember was the opening scene with that Star Destroyer coming into the frame from overhead, and I still remember it. And it just made a huge impression on me. So I want to say that's the movie where, you know, I thought to myself, this looks and sounds really cool.
Yeah.
So I would say that was kind of the beginnings of it. And then movies like, you know, Superman, the motion picture, mm-hmm. you know, same thing. You know, 1978, you know, the next year I go to the theater to see that. And again, I'm blown away by the visual effects, you know, and the whole sheer, you know, magnitude of the movie itself. So that's kind of where my interest started. And, But I, you know, the whole conjoining of that at home, that didn't come till later. I liked music. I listened to music at home. I loved listening to, you know, but of course that was all two channel stuff. Mm-hmm. It didn't come until, you know, much later where the two of them kind of came together in terms of sound being something that could be similar to, you know, the movie theaters at home.
Right. Yeah. And that's awesome. That I love that you're at the time you were twice my age for all intents and purposes. You were 13 in 77. I was 7. Okay.
Right.
I've met some people that didn't really get into Star Wars because they were about that age, maybe a little bit older. But I love the idea that you were that much more impressionable. You were older, so you could understand surround sound. I didn't get surround sound at the time, or even that whole idea. For me, it wasn't until the 80s watching it on HBO and wanting to duplicate and try to get back to maybe hear what I missed when I was 7 years old, right? But the idea that you... I love that you went right from that to 78 in Superman, the movie, because you were so impressionable that it was like, oh, and let me ask you this. What do you think of the 4K release of Superman, the movie, and that opening with the credits coming at us?
Please, if you read my review, you know, I specifically mentioned the chills that I got during the opening title sequence. You know, where, you know, you hear the music, the names,
oh, God.
And I'm getting chills right now.
Yeah, I know, so am I.
Yeah, so, yeah, I loved it. You know, I really didn't know what to expect. I think that Warner Brothers does a very decent job, you know, with their sound mixes and especially Dolby Atmos sound mixes. So I think someone over there understands what we as enthusiasts kind of, you know, would like to hear, at home. So, I was pleased with how they handled, Superman because, you know, a movie like that, it's not a new movie. You don't want it to sound, overly processed. You don't want there to be too many effects that are raining down on you when, you know, it's not necessarily practical. And I didn't get that from that mix, you know, it was there when it needed to be there and it wasn't when it didn't need to be. So, overall I loved it. Yeah. And you're right. That opening sequence, man, it still sticks with me.
It does. And what I think is amazing about it, like you said, it's not overly done. Did they even have that in 78? Right. Like, where would you have heard that if they had it available to you in the thing? I mean, I got to imagine it was somewhere, like maybe to a degree, like a really nice theater somewhere. Maybe that's what they were trying to execute, but it didn't go the way it goes now. So it's probably not necessarily true to the movie, but it feels like it is. And I think that's what you're getting at. Like, it doesn't feel like it's not supposed to be there. And. Sure. What I think is funny, though, is like, I agree with you. Warner Brothers, which is the movie we're going to be talking about today, another Warner Brothers feature. But they do you remember that one defaults? The disc defaults to the standard. It doesn't default to the Atmos.
Right.
I remember putting that disc in and being like, this doesn't sound that great. And then next thing you know, it's like, oh, all right, I'm not listening to it. Then you go back. It's a great AB if you didn't realize it, because it's wow, what a difference.
Yeah, for some reason, in some of the Warner's early, titles they released with Atmos mixes, the Atmos track was not the default listening track. It was like the 5.1 track.
Yeah,
and you know, I was making it part of my, you know, review to indicate that so that, you know, people, you know, knew that this was something that they needed to check prior to, you know, listening to the movie, and I think someone got the memo because they stopped doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Like, how many times did that happen to you though, that you'll start listening and be like, this just doesn't feel right. And it makes you click. Like you grab out, you're like, oh, I'm not even on the right one. It's like, how?
Oh yeah. 100%. You know?
And it's like, it takes a movie like Superman to all of a sudden, now every movie you check for like the next 6 months, you have to double check. And I was on with a listener earlier this week, and Mike, and he said the same thing. And it's like, I check every single time I put a movie in. Am I getting that Atmos track? Am I getting the track that I want, whether it's Atmos or DTS:X, or even if it's like, if it's supposed to, back in the day before we had Atmos, we'd check and make sure we were getting the 7.1 and not the Dolby Digital or what, right. You know what I mean? So,
well, it's like you said, it's true. Like for me, the remote that I use, it's actually an app, a remote control app that I use on my iPad. And that gives me like live feedback. So it'll tell me what the listening track is right there on the remote. So for me, it's just a glance down to look and see if I'm getting that. So I don't have to necessarily, I've gotten out of the habit of actually going and checking to see if I'm listening to the right track, you know, having to physically do it. For now, I can just take a glance down and get that feedback from my remote app, which is great.
That's exactly what I said to my listener, Mike. I was like, he has an Onkyo at the time. I have a Denon. I believe you have a Marantz. We'll get to your system right in a second. Sweet system. But anyways, but I think we probably have similar apps. It's the I use the Denon app, and every time I open up, I start the movie, and that's how I adjust my volume because I don't want anything on the screen and stuff. And I just go, I could slide it right to zero, get to reference level, and I see when as soon as the movie starts playing, it'll tell you DTS:X, Atmos, it'll switch right. And you see it, like you said, real time. And it's great. It's great.
Yep.
So
yeah, most definitely
saves you that, that headache. But yeah, it's funny. We were talking on Twitter this week about, I don't know if you saw this chain about, Star Wars being, I put out the tweet saying like it is the most important influential movie because of everything it did. And like you said, and how it brought I think it brought the awareness to Dolby surround sound. And then next thing you know, it's like, that's what we leapfrogged into home theater into the '80s and just how important that is. And then now here you are, here we are talking and you're like Star Wars and we all started there before home theater even was a thought, really.
Yeah, it's true. Because at the time, I mean, of course, like you said, we were kids, but even if you start moving into the 80s, you know, I mean, you have to remember the early beginnings of home theater, at least video wise, was like VHS. You know, you had tapes and you had laser discs in the 80s. And Dolby Pro Logic, you know, that was like the first, you know, toe that got dipped into the home, you know, the quote home theater pool. And that was my first experience with surround sound was, you know, via Dolby Pro Logic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're right. I mean, initially, you know, you were just glad to be able to see the movies at home, like see them at home.
Yeah.
You know, even if you were listening to your TV speakers, you're like, this is great. You know, this is Star Wars or this is. Right. You know, Raiders of the Lost Ark. I am sitting in my living room watching Raiders of the Lost Ark. It doesn't get any better than this.
Right.
Guess what? Yeah, it does.
People like us answered that question. Like, yeah, it does. Yep. And it was like, what's funny is, and I think we'll talk a little bit about it today. HBO is a huge part of that. I think we went to the theaters in the 70s, saw these movies. Like you said, Raiders came out in the 80s. And then it was like, it was that whole cable television, HBO, and that's where I saw Star Wars over and over. And like you said, once you get that ability, and the first time you see it at home, like you said, it's great. Now I'm getting to see it on this little screen, literally, and nothing could be better than that. And then you watch it again and again, and you're like, how can I get better sound? And I'm sure, like you said, you were into two-channel stereo, you had your music and stuff. I think that's where our first Frankenstein systems came from, right? We tried to hook that up to the television and try to recreate a theater environment without even having the right mixes. We were just trying to get more sound in our room for these movies, right?
Yeah, nobody was talking about mixing. You were just happy if the sound was coming through anything other than the television speakers. You were like, right. You know, hey, look. You know, I can take and I can hook this up. If I take these two, these speaker cables, and if I run them over here to the back of the VCR, maybe, you know, and you would just anything to be able to get the sound to come out of, you know, anything other than the TV speakers. So, yeah, you know, it didn't become a thing, you know, in terms of mixes and, you know, good and bad until later. At that point, you were just happy to be able to watch it at home, rewind, fast forward, you know, and so forth and so on. And maybe have it come out of your stereo speakers, whether they were good or bad.
Well, our original surround sound was probably 4-channel mono,
but that's exactly what it was.
4 channels around you. And you were like, this is just like seeing Star Wars in the theater. And we were so excited. And then because you had that idea, because you even were contemplating this at home, you start doing some reading and you're like, Dolby Surround Pro Logic? Wow. That's why it was called Logic. Doesn't it make sense that we put the center channel underneath or on top of the television? Everything came into being, but I love meeting people like this, that we're very similar, that we were already there before it was invented. we were already doing it. Yeah.
We knew what we wanted. We just weren't quite sure how to get there or what it was capable of, but we knew what we wanted.
Exactly. So talk about knowing what you want. I want your system. What a system. Let's talk about that. What do you got? Let you tell everybody what you have rocking there, because,
All right. Well, let's see now. First of all, to describe the room, it's kind of a good room for a home theater setup. It's not a huge room. It's 24 by 14. So I have the screen on the short wall, and I have a 7.2.4 Dolby Atmos system. So I have 4 speakers in ceiling speakers up top. They're made by Niles Audio. And, you know, for the bed channels, I have SVS Ultra all the way around, with the exception of the 2 rear center speakers. Those are also Niles Audio in-wall speakers.
Oh, nice.
And I have 2 SVS subs, the PC4000 cylinder subs. And, you know, this system just rocks in terms of, you know, output. Driving the system, the brains is a Marantz AV7706 AV processor. I have amps by Emotiva amps that are driving all the speakers down here. I have 2 of those, 2 7-channel Emotiva amps.
Oh,
I have an Oppo 203. UHD / Blu-ray / Universal Player. I also have the Panasonic UB820 player. I know it sounds a little strange, but I kind of like to have 2 disc players in my system.
I wanted to ask you about that, because I had both of them. I ended up selling my Oppo and flipping that into my Zepedi system. I ended up getting like $1,400 for the Oppo, and what do you think? Do you have a preference? Do you ever lean like one way or the other? Like when you're going to go and do your reviews, is there one you prefer? Something like that?
If someone said, you know, if someone was to keep track, if someone was there, you know, every time that I did a review and they just kind of ticked, you know, made a note, I would say that I use the Oppo more than I use the Panasonic.
Really?
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Even though you're running a projector. Very interesting.
Yeah. I didn't get to the projector yet, but so no. That's
spoilers.
Okay. That's okay. Yeah. I have the projector I have. It's the JVC NZ7. It's their latest 4K laser. 8K capable front projector. I have a Stuart Studio Tech 130. It's the G3 screen. I have like a Karata masking system that I use with that. And I just recently reached out to Chris Seymour, a Seymour AV, because what I want to do is I want to run a dual screen system in here where I can drop a scope screen down in front of this one. I like having a 16:9 screen, but I want to have a dual screen system where I can drop a scope screen down in front of that, which will give me a larger image for watching, you know, 235, 240, you know, scope material. So I got together with them and we went back and forth and came up with the best solutions for that. So that screen is being built for me. So that'll be here probably in about 6 weeks or so. So I'm looking forward to that. Those guys are great to work with, you know, great to talk with, very knowledgeable. So that's, let me see. I have an Apple TV 4K that I use for streaming, which I love. And all these devices are great because they can all connect with my, the remote app that I use is, it's called Roomy. It's Roomy Remote. So all these devices that I have that are IP capable can connect with the app via IP for control purposes and feedback purposes. So it's great because I can get feedback from the Apple TV, feedback from the Oppo. I can control the Panasonic, the projector, you know, the whole system. So it's awesome. So I like that.
Oh, I'm going to have to talk to you more about that one. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
like the it's fantastic. I love it.
Cool.
Yeah.
What kind of is your screen acoustically transparent or are you solid?
The one that's coming from Seymour AV will be acoustically transparent, but I don't necessarily need that aspect of it. The one that I have now is not, the Stuart is not. Mm-hmm. It's not acoustically transparent. It's their Stereotech 130. So it's the Generation 3. So it's a screen wall.
I like that. I like that idea. Man, I'm going to have to talk to you about that too, because I have, mine's, I could probably do the same thing. Have a drop down, you know, CinemaScope screen. That would be really nice. But it would have to be, that's the problem is the way my wall is, it would have to be acoustically transparent. And then it would also allow me to compare acoustically transparent versus the solid screen, you know, and sure. Be able to, you could literally do an AB by just, well, it would be a little out of focus because you'd have to refocus and reset those settings for each one because one's a little closer than the other, of course. But
well, the JVC has the you know, the lens memory feature,
yep.
So
yep,
you know, essentially, you know, you drop the screen down, press a button, and it'll reset and do all the focus and distance and so forth and so on.
Very nice. Very nice. So let's get to that. Like I said, I love your system and I got to talk to you more about that remote.
Yeah, sure.
And we're going to get to the Apple, the Apple TV in that you love it, but yet you were still a little hesitant a little earlier. So, but let me ask you, how did all of this passion, we'll just leave it at that. We'll just call it passion for time's sake. How did you get started at AVS? How did you get started doing all these great reviews?
Well, let's see now. It actually started before AVS. I bought my first widescreen TV. It was a rear projection CRT, you know, Toshiba TV, and I was looking for a way to optimize the picture quality. So I went online and I found a website online that it was like a, you know, forum-based website, you know, and there was a lot of people on there, a lot of enthusiasts like myself, and that's where I found the answers to my questions. So as it turned out, I found that being on the site regularly, I was interacting with people, you know, who knew as much or not as much as I did about, you know, home theater, sound, video, whatever it might be. And there were certainly people who knew more. And so I started interacting and I was approached by the site's admin and asked me if I wanted to like moderate, you know, a few of their forums. So I said, sure. So long story short, I did that. And as a result of that, I found myself suddenly, you know, getting offers to review hardware. So I started reviewing hardware. And I then rose to a point on the site where I then kind of took over that aspect of it and was interacting with, you know, manufacturers requesting gear for review, so forth and so on. And that kind of segued into, you know, the software side of things. We had guys on the site who were doing software reviews for DVD at that time. We were Blu-ray and HD DVD, that was all just starting to, you know, to develop. So that's kind of how the software side of things began. And after doing that for a number of years, the site just kind of wasn't, you know, it was starting to flounder a bit. And I was approached by ABS, who I guess had noticed, you know, my writing and so forth and so on. And they asked me if I wanted to come over to ABS and do software reviews for them. And that was in 2008, and the rest is history.
Nice. Nice. So, yeah, so you kind of really started doing the hardware stuff. And which, all right, let me ask you this then. Which do you prefer? Like, if you had, I mean, obviously you're still doing the software now, but I just feel like that seems like so much more fun to me.
Well, I think it really depends on where your passion lies. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I love playing with new gear and I loved it when I was doing it, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And when I say it's a lot of work, you're constantly tearing your system down, you know, bringing in stuff. You know, you have in your system for a while, you're taking it back out. There's the whole, you know, getting things back to be, you know, to be returned, you know, and you have stuff piling up all over the place. So it just, you know, it became a bit of a hassle. I enjoyed it for the time that I did it. But, you know, obviously, I think, as you just said, you know, I'm still doing the software stuff. So, you know, I'm still enjoying that.
Yeah. But don't slight the work that you're doing. I mean, your reviews are in depth. I mean, you give, I'm trying to, when I don't consider mine reviews. I always do quotation because I get more into the experience and it's not really a review of how good something is. If I'm talking about something, I already think it's good. Otherwise I wouldn't have been talking about it in the first place. Where sure. You're more of a, hey, skip, don't even bother with this one. You don't like the quality of this printing or whatever. And that's, a lot goes into that. You know, you might not have to tear apart your system, but you also break down with the, you know, the quality of the movie itself, never mind the home theater experience. So, I mean, how long does a typical breakdown of a movie for you, how long does that take?
Well, my process basically is as I'm watching a movie, I actually use my phone, the notes section of my phone to take notes, you know, on the things that I'm seeing or hearing or whatever. So that kind of helps when it's time to sit down and then begin the process, you know, of transferring that into, you know, into a review.
Mm-hmm.
So a typical review, it kind of depends. If it's a standard, you know, Blu-ray review, I would say that's probably an hour to sit down and write it up. I bet it's probably an hour and 15 minutes, give or take. If it's one that's got a lot going on. So if it's a 4K where I'm covering both the 4K elements and the, you know, if it's a Blu-ray combo pack and the Blu-ray elements, as well as the bonus features, you know, the soundtracks, both in Atmos and in, you know, in standard lossless. That one's closer to 2 hours.
Wow.
You're
doing faster than me. I can't, because I have to, like, I have to sit and, like, I have to, first off, if I've never seen the movie, I have to sit and watch the movie, no note taking, no nothing, just experience the movie. Then go back through, then I do my timestamps and stuff for what I really want to talk about in the movie. Then after I do that, then I go back through, and now I'll go to each of those timestamps and talk about each of those timestamps. And that's hours and hours of, you know, but that's why you have to like the movie. You know, you're doing movies that maybe you actually didn't like. And, you know, that's gotta be tough.
Well, you know, I mean, when you're dealing with the studios, you know, and they're sending you stuff, they expect you to cover it.
Right.
It would kind of be unfair to tell them, you know, darn it, this is a dud.
No.
You know, so no, and I'm not saying that you do that. I'm just saying, so
right. Sometimes
you get stuck with a lemon, you know, and you kind of work your way through it. Now I have one of those coming up.
Oh!
you kind of work your way through it, and you know, because you know, some people feel like, hey, yeah, the movie was terrible, so then therefore everything was terrible. And that's not always true. Sometimes right. The movie's bad, but it looks and sounds good.
Exactly. You know,
so you want to give it its due if you can. In that regard, I always try to do that. And I try to look at movies. I love movies. I know you do too. So I try to look at movies as a creative work, and I try to see things through the mm-hmm. you know the filmmaker's you know eye in terms of what it is he was trying to impart to us as the audience. Mm-hmm. So you know if sometimes they might get a little extra leeway from me. You know, in terms of looking at a movie from that aspect, instead of just totally, you know, trashing it because it's not a genre that I typically enjoy. So I try to be fair in that regard.
That's great. I think that's why I say we get along. It's like, this is the first time actually speaking to you, but, the idea of I'm the same way, and it's having, you know, grown up in the art world and going to school for, and actually being quote unquote trained to take criticisms and understand and seeing reading art and seeing it and being like, what were they thinking here? Trying to put yourself in that person's, you know, mindset. And sometimes the artist does stuff just because he's trying to, you know, get you to have any kind of emotion, good or bad. And that's the idea of it. So, and home theater, I think is like, to me, it's almost one of the ultimate arts because, like you said, there's so many facets of it that can fascinate people that, like you said, it might not be the best story, but wow, what a home theater experience, right? and by the same token, there'll be other ones that are great stories, but it's not about the home theater experience at that point. And you're just like, and it's that marriage of the two that we go, holy, and
right.
Let's go right into it. Well, my most professional segue ever, the Batman. Which I think is that marriage of movie making, storytelling, and home theater experience. So, I read your take. If you haven't read his take on ABS Forums, it will be in the show notes. Go see and read Ralph's take. But let's get into your take because we were very similar. And the take on the movie itself, then we'll get into the home theater experience.
You know, I think I mentioned in my review, you know, I mean, with these movies, you get to a point where you're like, okay, so another Batman movie is coming out. Okay. Now we have Robert Pattinson playing Batman. Really? I mean, you know, but I remember when Iron Man was first announced, I remember thinking Robert Downey Jr. is going to play Iron Man. How are they? I mean, Iron Man was one of my favorite comic books when I was a kid. So I'm thinking, how are they going to even make the armor look real? How are they going to? And then I saw the movie and I was like, oh my God, they got it.
Yeah.
They completely nailed this, you know, and Robert Downey Jr., when he said, I am Iron Man, he wasn't kidding.
Okay. Right.
Oh. So here we are. Fast forward. We've had, you know, George Clooney. We've had Adam West. We've had Christian Bale, Val Kilmer, you know, Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton's Batman to me, when it first came out, I was like, okay, this is really cool. I wasn't really a big DC Comics guy,
okay.
But I had never seen the Dark Knight element
right.
or side of Batman. And to me, that first Michael, you know, Keaton movie, I was like, okay, this is cool. Just the whole... Right. thing, you know, the way the movie was shot, the way it looked, the way, you know, but, you know, Michael Keaton, he just wasn't intimidating enough for me.
Mr. Mom.
Yeah, he was too little. When he grabs that guy and goes, when he grabs the guy and the guy goes, who are you, man? And he goes, I'm Batman. I was just not impressed by that.
Yeah.
But I still love the movie. Yeah, it's not good. Okay. So we certainly got closer with Christian Bale. So here we are with the Batman. It comes out. My son saw it in the theater. He's a big comic, you know, he loves Marvel. He likes DC. He says it was good. There were some things about it. We'll talk after you've seen it, Dad, but it was good. So I was like, all right. So I purposely don't bother watching it on streaming when it's on, you know, HBO Max. I didn't go to see it in the theater, and I sit down and I watch it at home. And I really enjoyed it. You know, I thought that, you know, the way that they shaped the narrative, I thought it was perfect. They kept the story simple. It felt like more of a detective story to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like what they did with the, you know, with the villains. You know, we got some introductions. You know, there were some just, you know, definite differences between these villains that we've seen portrayed in the past. So I liked how they handled that. I thought that I thought Robert Pattinson did a great job. I thought the balance between story and action, and, you know, with the, you know, with the culmination of the visual effects in the film, were just spot on. Spot on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. To me, did you read a lot of Batman? Did you read any Batman comics? It didn't sound like you really did.
Nope.
Okay.
Really.
Which is really amazing to me, and actually shows how intuitive you are to, like, what you said earlier about what the director, what the artist is intending here, because a lot of the people that, most of the people that really enjoy this story are comic book fans, and how faithful Matt Reeves has been to the comic. And you can get into all the different comics that this is pulling from, but just the idea that, I mean, that's not even, you just liked the storytelling, which I think is great. And a lot of that is, and even the feel, the look of it came from the comics. And that's fantastic.
Awesome.
That is fantastic. Let's touch on your, okay, you didn't see it in the theater and you skipped the streaming. Why?
I got to tell you, to be perfectly honest, I think sometimes I go to the theater, there are certain movies, and that's probably one of them, but there are certain movies that you really should see in the theater,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that was probably one of them. But, you know, if my son had come back from seeing it in the theater and was like, that, you know, hands down, this is one you got to catch in the theater, I probably would have gone. But I don't want to say his reaction, it wasn't a tepid reaction, but it wasn't an over enthusiastic one either. So it wasn't enough to get me out to go to the theater to see it. And quite frankly, you know, I am intimately familiar with the surroundings here in my room. And there are just, you know, times where I want to sit and I want to watch a movie in here. Okay. Because I know what I'm looking for. And I, you know, so that, you know, for me, the streaming, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. You know, I didn't hear good things about this, you know, the streaming version. So I didn't want it to taint, because sometimes if you're sitting there and, you know, you hear things like that and then you're watching it, you're unable to focus on the story because, you know, you're looking for these things you've been hearing about. Oh, you know,
right.
There's compression related issues. There's this, there's that. So I didn't want to be distracted by that. I really wanted to be able to grasp the story, and kind of not be focused on those things, having the confidence that more than likely the disc wasn't going to let me down in that regard.
Right. Right. And yeah, that's the idea. Streaming to disc is, streaming's getting a lot better, but disc, you know, you have that consistency you can always fall back on.
Mm-hmm.
Have you since gone back to see, to check out any scenes on streaming on HBO Max?
Well, I have not. I haven't really had the time.
Right.
My buddy, Brandon, from Theater Bite, he was after me. He and I text a lot, you know, mm-hmm. we're always in touch, you know, and, he was after me about it. He goes, oh, yeah, you got to go back and look at the, you know, you got to go back and look at the streaming. It's not good. It's just, there's that. So, I promised him I would do that, but I have not gotten around to it yet.
Yeah. I'll be interested to hear your take on that as well. I did it. I got it on the Kaleidoscape like a month or whenever mm-hmm. it came out, a while ago. And I did the comparisons, and I bought the digital, which I thought was a little better than the streaming was. And it's, yeah, it's, I'll be interested to hear your take on it. I mean, as you know, let's get into the home theater experience of this movie, especially on disc. And First off, first and foremost, black levels. Gotta have your black levels set correctly, right?
Yeah, I actually think I put that in my I put that in my review that you're definitely gonna want to ensure that you have your, you know, your brightness settings, your black levels accurately set for this, because if not, you're going to have issues where you're not going to be able to see shadow detail. It's going to be crushed. You know, it's going to be a problem. Yeah, because, you know, especially with a you know, a movie like this, and when you combine it with, you know, high dynamic range, where you have scenes, where you have, you know, bright objects or, you know, specular highlights and things like that that are going on set against those deep black backgrounds, it makes the image appear extremely, I guess the word would be dynamic. You know, it just, the blacks just stand out. It's amazing. It is one of the better titles that I've seen in that regard.
Yeah. And the other thing is, if you don't have it set up, if you don't know that your system's set up correctly, you don't know you have good black levels, this is one of those movies you're going to call a lot of things into question, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of this movie is like the black bars at the top and the bottom, for instance. You're going to be like, wait a minute, why is everything different from the way this movie was shot, the tones that this was shot with, even the deepest blacks. I think it looks gorgeous, but I don't think that the deepest blacks are necessarily always equal to the black bars that we have at the top and the bottom, right?
I would say that's true.
But that comes from it being such a dark movie, I think,
right?
Where it's like the entire thing is, most of the bright light you said comes in just small little bright lights, and that's it. But there's a hue to this movie as well, like almost like everything's got almost like a warmer tone to it. Like even in the darker scenes, especially the indoor scenes, you have that indoor lighting, that warmer lighting, and just seeing that, that gradation that you get in each of these scenes. And then, like I said, if you don't know that your black levels are set right, then you're going to be like, oh, this seems off, something right. But no, that's what it's supposed to look like, which is really, you know, what we're going for here, is trying to experience what, you know, Matt Reeves intended, what they intended by making this movie. Go ahead.
And I was just going to say, I think that's an important element when we go back to the whole home theater discussion. Excuse me. That's an important thing, important piece of it, not just for on the audio end, but also on the video end, is to ensure that, you know, your system is set up properly so that whatever, or you can get as close to what was visually intended by the filmmaker, by the sound designer, whatever it might be, as possible. And, you know, most systems that people have are not just plug and play. There's a certain amount of tweaking and a certain amount of things that should be done in order to ensure that what you're listening to is what was intended.
Right. Right.
And what you're seeing is what was intended.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's get into the overall sound. Then I have a few scenes I wanted to talk to you about. But the overall sound in this movie, I mean, it's just as dynamic as that picture. It's amazing.
I think people, when it comes to Dolby Atmos mixes, I think that people instinctively look for, you know, sounds that are emanating from above.
Rain on the
rooftop. And while that is,
they want that simple, direct, like, there it is. Yeah. I got it.
I can hear that. That I can hear.
I've got a scene that I really want to talk to you about that's really going to expand on that, but go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. So, and when they don't get that, you know, it's a crappy mix. And I try to explain to people, and I try to point out in my reviews that, you know, the Atmos track, the mix doesn't just use the overheads, it uses the bed channels, you know, and a movie like American Sniper is a good example. Mm. There's a movie that has an excellent Atmos track, but not a lot of information that's coming from the overhead channels. But it uses those bed channels to the utmost, And I mean, things like a shot that starts at the front of the room and lands in the rear of the room, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the things that can make, you know, a track really, really good. So what I found with the Batman was that the Batman wasn't a track that consistently engaged, you know, the overhead channels. It did, no doubt about
yes.
that. But, you know, but it used them. What I like is that it used them in what I consider to be in an intelligent way, in an engaging way, and in a way that brought you into a scene mm-hmm. when you needed to be brought into the scene, okay, and kept you there as long as it wanted to.
Mm. I like that. Yes. And I think what a lot of people are starting to get more and more education on this and understand what it means. But what I've always tried to imagine that Atmos is go back to the days when we got ProLogic and it was, okay, we all understood that your left and right can make it sound like there's an image in between them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Atmos takes that to the next level. Any one of those speakers, they can put a sound anywhere in your room now by using that overhead speak. It's not just like you said, like you were saying, people want that direct correlation, like rain on the roof. It's also that your rear channel and your overhead can pull that sound and make it go to somewhere that there isn't a speaker, right?
That's right.
Here's an opening. It's in the opening. And do you remember the scene? It's very, very, it's right at the beginning. So he's kneeling down, somebody has just been killed, and he pulls out a piece of duct tape. You know mm-hmm. the scene I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, "Ksh." That sound of him stretching out the duct tape starts 100% accurately at the front of your room, off the screen, right above where my center speaker is, right below the screen. So it sounds like it's coming right from in that area where he's got the roll of tape. But then he stretches it out and one hand goes further off to the right. And then the other hand goes a little bit to the left, but he also goes up in the air with his arms.
That's right.
That sound obviously pans off to the right. But if you pay attention, it also goes up the screen.
Right.
Now, is that Atmos or is that imagined? And that's, I don't know, because you know what I mean? Like in the old days, we would have said that's just our eyes telling our ears tricking us. And our brain saying, well, it had to come from there because we saw it go up there. But it's stuff like that literally could be put in by the sound designer using object-based. He can take that sound and he could move that up the screen, correct?
Sure, 100%.
Isn't that cool? Is it? I mean, that's what this is about.
I'm with you 100%. You know, and it's the little things like that.
Yeah.
Okay, it's the little things like that. That can make it a track go from really good to great.
Right.
You know, it's the little things, you know, it's not, like you said, it's not the obvious, you know, the rain on the roof. It's, you know, it's the small things that you notice, but it's also, again, goes back to what I said earlier. It's imperative that you have your system properly adjusted. Okay. So you're not missing that information because some of those things, those nuances, they're small. And if you don't have your system, you know, accurately calibrated and balanced, you know, you know, those things could easily be missed.
Yeah.
So, I agree with you, DJ. That's that's all good stuff, man.
Yeah, that's the stuff I love. That now another one. Let's go back. Still in the opening scene here, the very opening scene when he's looking over to another building, and the lighting here. You have the really, it's nighttime. He's supposed to be using some like night vision type goggles, but you're looking through this and it's amplifying the light that he's actually getting.
Right.
And look at the cool nighttime moonlight on the sides of this, like almost like cement bricks type thing building, right?
Right.
So it's all cooler, but the warm light coming from either the spotlights that are shooting up the side of the building, which I think are great, like the highlight spotlights, the decorative lights outside the building, that warm light on the building, that's a great contrast. But then you have the windows themselves and the warm light inside the windows, you know, so you're getting all of that. And then there's one part where a police car drives by and you hear the siren. I believe it's on the right, but then you see the blue and the red just flash on the side.
Sure.
Barely flash. But all of that is, I mean, it's just setting that tone for the entire movie. And it's just those very, very subtle tones that I just think that I thought were amazing.
I think, you know, going back to high dynamic range, I think that that those minute details, okay, those minute details, those highlights might be missed in a standard dynamic range presentation. It's the addition of HDR that kind of brings out those little nuances that you're talking about, those subtle gradations in the light where you can see the variations, you know, and the differences, right, you know, in the intensity of the light that you might not get with a standard definition, you know, presentation. So, yeah, I agree with you. And when you look at it and you're sitting there, and it's good to hear, I'm happy to hear from you that these, you know, these are things that you see. Because not everybody sees, you know, some people, you know, you sit there and you just kind of like, oh yeah, and you're paying attention, but you're not really paying attention.
Right.
You know, and it's the things like that, that we as, you know, I don't want to just say enthusiasts, but you know, we as writers, okay, kind of look for, so we can now then, you know, accurately or try to accurately as best our ability judge the quality of a presentation. And I think for the, you know, for the cinematographer and so forth and so on, it's probably nice to hear that, yeah, that these things were noticed because, you know, a lot of work goes into it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sure there's stuff that we missed yet, you know, that they wanted in there, but regardless.
Yeah. And I mean that, but that's what's great about a good piece of art is that you can keep coming back to it and be like, I didn't even see that before. Did it, what, you know, what, and the same with our gear. That's why we love upgrading our gear all the time. It's like, I get this because you know what? I saw something or heard something I hadn't seen before. Like I guarantee you when you get your CinemaScope screen, now that you have a bigger, those images are now larger, right? So it's going to enable you to see things that you probably couldn't have seen before because they were little details, but now they're blown up onto a bigger screen. And I mean, it's the technology and the art all working together that just, that's why I said, I think it's the ultimate art because there's so much to it. Let's step to the audio. And I know this isn't a spoiler, meeting the Batmobile for the first time at 1 hour and 19 minutes for everybody out there. I mean, it's not a spoiler, you know, it's in there, you know, if you haven't seen the movie yet, you can't wait to hear it. If you want to see it, you can go to 1 hour, 19 minutes even. And they, what a setup. What a setup.
I mean, you know, anybody who's, you know, seen a Batman movie going back to the one with Michael Keaton knows that, yeah, we're going to meet the Batmobile. We're going to see, you know, what this film's Batmobile is going to look like. So, you know, it's coming, like you said.
Yeah.
That scene, you know, because you get the intro, which is phenomenal, just like the initial, you know, the first time you see it and hear it. And then what follows is, you know, basically, you know, a surround sound, you know, demo, because there's I'm not giving too much away, but there's a chase that follows that.
Right.
And it sounds, not only does it sound really good, but it looks really good at the same time. So you're kind of getting this full experience, you know, for that period of time. And yeah, meeting the Batmobile was probably one of the best highlights in the film.
Yeah. And I mean, again, the bass, the rumble that you feel, all of that leading up to it. There's a bunch of stuff leading up to it. So it doesn't just jump out. I mean, you meet this thing during a pretty loud scene anyways.
Sure.
Then the Batmobile shows up, right? But one of the things that I thought was really interesting is the choice of tones that they had for like the blue flame on the back, and just the way it lit up and the way, like you said, like a lot of this movie is just highlights here and there, bright lights up in the sky, but on a dark night or something. But dark night, no pun intended. But the the highlights during this chase and that flame and so much going there, the way smoke or fog might be getting highlighted by these same things, that it was just, again, so much depth to that picture all the while that you're like, oh, my subwoofers, oh, my room, oh, the sound. It's amazing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, it is, you know, one of those full home theater experiences where, you know, you're getting visually stimulated as well as, you know, audibly stimulated by what you're seeing and hearing. So you're getting like the best of both worlds. And, you know, there was never a time where I felt or found myself being taken out of the movie by anything on either front. Sometimes, you know, you might see something where you might want to pause for a second and go back. That didn't look right. Or that didn't sound right. Or because sometimes, you know, you have expectations. We can't help it. You know, we have expectations of what we think something should look and sound like. And if it doesn't, then that can sometimes take you out of a particular moment or a scene. I didn't have that experience here.
Right. Yeah. It's, and in that chase, character's car kind of rolls, right? The Atmos on that. I've never heard my room barrel roll that way.
You mean the part where we were all in the car too?
Yes. Where we're in the car as it's as it's rolling. But your room is, it's like your room is rolling on its, like the long, well, in my room, it's the long way, but it's like you're rolling as you're looking at the screen, things are going around and open over your head and down under you. But I listened to that a couple of times, more than a couple of times. I've seen the movie more than a couple of times. And that's a fun one. That's a fun one. One more scene, really quickly, but it is probably one of my favorite because it felt to me pulled right out of the comic book. It's at 1 hour and 36 minutes, if you want to start in 16 seconds or so. Bat and the Cat, which we know are in the movie, but they meet on a rooftop. And that scene there and the backdrop of Gotham and them up high and then almost silhouetted, but not. And it felt to me like it was pulled right from the comics. I've seen that scene in panels and you're just like, it was just beautiful. And the way they looked at each other. I mean, there was one part where I think Batman, he's got his knee up just like there's no other reason for his knee to be pointed up like the way it was. Like he's standing with one leg straight and the other than it was probably drawn that way somewhere. And Matt Reeves told him, do this. And it's just like, but then the tone of the city behind him, the warmer lights and everything. And then, you know, she's not Catwoman yet, but Selina Kyle looking up at him and just their sizes and the silhouette. It's just a beautifully shot scene, especially in that CinemaScope look. It was just awesome. Do you remember that? Do you remember that one?
I do remember the scene. I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. And I would agree that more than likely, it would stage that way because that's how they storyboarded it. And there was a reason why that, you know, that was done that way. But, you know, the visuals, the visual effects, to me, underscored the film's thematic tone. You know, it was just phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Matt Reeves did a great job with that, where it's, like I said, you open the movie with those tones on it kind of sets that mood. For you, sometimes whether you realize it or not, but these scenes can really do that. And then how the movie plays out, and I don't want to give it away here, but there's some tones that I can talk about at the end of the movie as well, that you're like, okay, well, I see what they tried to do there. And it really, this so far is really very close to being one of my favorite movies of the year because of the depth of it. And just knowing I was sitting down with you, I'm like, all right, I'll just watch a couple. I couldn't. I had to sit and watch the whole damn thing.
Watch it again.
Yeah. Yep. You're just like, I was just going to do a couple of scenes, but you just get so engrossed. And then again, you see more and more stuff. Just how many times have you seen it so far? Just the one?
Just the one. And I actually went back and went over a few scenes just to check a few things. But I haven't seen the whole thing through twice.
I have. And it's good. And it, talking with the comic book people, like my friends that are really into comics and really into Batman, so much depth to this movie pulled right from the comics. Almost everything in, I have yet to hear about something that's in the movie that wasn't pulled from the comics. And it's like,
That's good to hear.
It is. It's Matt Reeves so passionate about it. So passionate about it. So, all right. Other than that, let's wrap up quickly with, give me a couple of your other favorite movies that you like to just really like when you want to relax and sit down and be like, rewind and be like, I got to watch it. And I think we already covered Star Wars, and reset. You just go in. What's the movie you like to put on?
All right, so I actually jotted a couple of down here because I don't like, you know, when people say, oh,
you're a writer.
People say, what's your favorite movie? I'm like, really? I mean, as someone who loves movies, I mean, what genre are we talking about? Okay, right. So I'm just going to run through these really quickly. Okay, The Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, yeah.
As Good as It Gets. 7.
Yeah. Oh.
The Abyss.
Yeah.
The Godfather.
Yeah.
Raiders of the Lost Ark. Gladiator. American Beauty.
Oh.
Jaws. Yeah. Jaws. Alien. Back to the Future. Fatal Attraction. West Side Story. The 60s version.
Yep, yep.
The Outlaw Josie Wales.
Ooh.
Monsters, Inc.
Yep.
Toy Story.
Yep.
Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back. Dances with Wolves, Pulp Fiction, Open Range.
Yep.
And What About Bob?
Oh, there you go. Oh, I love What About Bob. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot one more. The Untouchables.
Oh yeah, Untouchables.
Which is sitting up here. I'm reviewing the 4K version of that. So
4K just came out. Yep.
So those are some of my favorites.
That's a great list. That's a great list. Obviously you have your home theater ones, The Abyss, and you got, I mean, those are great, but you got a What About Bob? You've got, As Good as It Gets. And there was one other one that I wanted to remember. I can't remember what it was.
Fatal Attraction.
Nope. I love that.
Jaws.
It was right before Jaws, I think.
Okay. American Beauty.
Yes. Love that movie. Such a great movie.
Come on, Kevin Spacey kills it. It's just such a good movie. Some people look at that movie like, oh, you know, it's kind of weird. You know, this guy.
It is.
But hands down,
yeah.
You know, one of my favorites. I could watch it. You know, every time I watch it,
you get Shawshanked.
Yeah, exactly.
Which you had on the list. You
get Shawshanked. Yeah, exactly. It's like Shawshank.
Yeah, I think everything on your list, you get shot. Those are Shawshanked movies, right? Yep. You're just sitting there and you're just like, you're flipping the channels. And I don't know if I don't know how your home setup is, but I'll be watching. I'll be like, all right, honey, I got to go downstairs. I just flip by something and I got to watch it in the theater.
Got to watch it all now. Yep.
Right. I can't watch it in the living room. I have to go down and watch it in the theater. And yeah, that's, oh man.
Yep, 100%.
Awesome. Ralph, this has been nothing short of than amazing. It's like,
no, I am so thrilled that we were able to you know, get together on this because I really enjoy your posts on Twitter. I enjoy interacting with you on Twitter. I can see that you're as passionate about all of this as I am, so I definitely appreciate that, and I certainly appreciate your support and you asked me to come on your show. It's truly an honor.
An honor. Ooh. No, thank you for coming on. All the links to find him, they're in the show notes. Read his stuff. But like I said, I love reading your stuff. You give a great breakdown, an honest breakdown. Sometimes you don't like it, but you'll say why. But then when you get into the home theater part of it, you're like, hey, this is one you're going to want to own. Maybe the movie didn't hold up as well or something. And we can't ask for more than that. And it's very detailed too, in all three aspects, movie, sound, and picture. Great, great reviews. And honestly, the first time we met, we haven't said this, but the first time we met was from Jeff from HD Report was putting us together to do that review.
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
That's right.
Uh-huh. And we conversed, like you said, DMing and stuff like that back and forth. And I was like, oh my God, I'm doing a review with Jeff and Ralph. I'm like, I was so overwhelmed. I was like, okay. We were doing a year-end wrap up, and I was like, oh, because I had done it the year before. I said he wanted to get you the year before. It was supposed to be the three of us then. You were super busy, so you couldn't do that one. But we got to it early enough the next year, and right. I was like, oh God, Ralph's coming on board. Honestly, if I hadn't done it the year before with Jeff and had a little bit, I think I would have been too overwhelmed. I was like, because I've been reading your stuff, and you're one of the people that I go to after I watch. And I'm like, hey, I use you all the time for confirmation. Like, hey, he saw what I saw or heard what I heard. All right, cool. I don't read them beforehand because I don't want to be swayed. I want to see and hear stuff for myself. And then after the fact, I'll be like, all right.
Well, believe it or not, we all do that, you know, and listen. You know, we're all in the same boat here. We're all guys who just love this stuff, and we love to talk about it. We love to write about it, and we like to share the passion with others. So you can trust me, man. We are both right on the same level, and we're both right on the same page, brother. So now you have myself. So now you can shoot me a text, Ralph. What did you think?
Oh, like, I know.
You back? Yeah. Oh, Jeff. Yeah. I mean, DJ. Oh, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You're gonna be sorry. As my listeners know, I like to talk. No, yeah, no, I can't. I honestly, I want you to text me after you see it, just like you say when you check out the Batman on HBO Max.
HBO,
yeah.
Okay, I will do that.
And it's like, I mean, my theory is, I love HBO. I love HBO Max. Like we said, it got us through the 80s. It introduced us. It was part of the reason for home theater today. But I really think HBO Max, I think they're putting their money to the masses. And then if we want the quality, go buy the WB disc. And then I really think that's what they're going for. And I don't think that is a bad business model at all. Just don't think
I don't
that. Yeah, I think that's great, because if you really care, you've got more. You want more out of your stuff, and you're not going to get it through streaming. So
agreed.
All right, Ralph. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. We got to do this again soon, and we'll do a couple more breakdowns. This has been awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it sounds good. Looking forward to it. It's great. It was great to finally meet up, man.
Yeah. Thanks, Ralph. Really appreciate it.
All right, DJ. Take care. Be well.
Wow. Just finished talking to Ralph, obviously. But I wanted to record this right away, right after. I was so excited to talk to him. And then actually talking to him, that is the first time we actually spoke. We've DM'd, like we said, for quite a while. And I've read his reviews, and I feel like we saw things kind of the same way. But then actually talking to somebody and hearing that enthusiasm and that passion that he has for home theater, and then how we both came up through the 80s. And, you know, he's a little bit older than I am, but it was the same idea, but the same impressions. And it was just so much fun. We actually chatted for a few minutes afterwards, and it's like, he's not kidding. He's like, text me. And I was like, this is fantastic. So I thought it was awesome to meet him, but then to actually that experience of sitting down with him and talking to him. Thank you very much, Ralph, if you're listening. I thanked him again earlier too. But anyways, yeah, so much fun. And that's a compliment to Ralph, but it's also a compliment to everybody out there, all the home theater people. We just have a great time. I've yet to meet somebody that, not that I would tell you, but I can honestly tell you that I've never, there's nobody I'm keeping a secret that isn't a nice guy or person. I haven't actually talked to any women yet. So, but yeah, there's nobody that, it's just been awesome. And hey, if it wasn't for that, would I open it up to everybody and open it up to the listeners like I have? And it's like, but I have zero reservation about it. I know it's just all so much fun, and everybody's been so great. And Yeah, really, really kind of special to me, honestly. But so thank you, Ralph. But let's get back on to the topic of the Batman. And I'll give my take on, you know, spoiler free still, but my take on the Batman in 4K and in 4K on the Kaleidoscape. I got to say, it's like identical. I don't see a difference. And I don't know what that means to people. I don't know, like, Kaleidoscape fans, if they're going to be like, oh, no, this is better, but disc fans are like, haha, Kaleidoscape, it's no better. And I'm like, okay, but that's fine. But I honestly don't see a difference. I've checked all my favorite scenes, the ones that I went over there, obviously, with Ralph. And I'm not seeing or hearing anything really, any difference. It's like, I want to get an opportunity to get my son in and try to A/B it for him. But I also know he doesn't have as discerning ear or eye as I do. He doesn't, and he admittedly doesn't care as much as I do. And so I'm actually looking, and I wish somebody could A/B it for me, and maybe I could see or hear a difference. But at the same time, I'm going to draw on my other experiences with movies where I did see and hear a difference. And like I said, notably Star Wars, obviously the first movie I put in or watched on Kaleidoscape, and pretty much every other movie I've ever watched first time I got a new piece of equipment. But there was a difference there. And then I come to find out that the discs, discs are smaller. So it's a smaller file. So maybe it's such a minor difference. And to all the Kaleidoscape fans, it's like, yes, it is a minor difference, but it's not huge, but there is something there that is better. But like I said, it's like, for all the disc fans, like, oh, it's indiscernible. Well, no, I discerned it, but there is something there in a case like that. Whereas the Batman, I believe it was like 96 point something gigabyte disc, but Warner Brothers puts out 100 gigabyte disc. So it's covered. So you shouldn't really even see or hear any difference. But then you get the Disney titles where you get the 66 gigabytes and that's the best you get. But then a file might be 78 or 86 or whatever, or like Endgame, it's over 100. But yet Endgame's disc is still a 66 gigabyte disc. So you could see that there's something going on there. So you would expect there to be a little bit of a difference. But yeah, I think the Batman looks fantastic on 4K. I think it looks fantastic on Kaleidoscape. I think it's a work of art. Obviously that's what I went over with Ralph, and he feels obviously the same way. Which I think is ironic. Not ironic, I think it's interesting, I should say, because he doesn't come at it from the comic book art world background that I come at it. But yet we both came to kind of the same conclusion, especially reading his review, in that he really enjoyed the fact that it was more a detective story. I don't even know if he said that in the podcast here today. I don't remember, but in his review, he mentioned how he really liked that it was a detective story. And that is one of the things that I absolutely love about this. I read Batman Hush. I read Long Halloween. I've read a bunch of long Batman runs that had detective stories in them. But Hush and Long Halloween are directly related to this movie. I mean, they're literally almost like the stories pulled from like the two of them in a way. And this is the first movie that you could say that you were getting that. And all the other Batman movies were more superhero movies. Even the Christopher Nolan, it was a grounded superhero movie, but you still got that superhero idea, but you didn't get as much detective, as much mystery as there was in the Batman. And in the Batman, it's a detective story, but it's the way that detective story was told. And that's been done multiple times in the comics that I think where it rings true. Again, getting back to the Kaleidoscape and getting back to the 4K discs, you're looking at pretty much the same thing. Going back to what's nice here in my system now is back when I was running the Zapiti and doing a bunch of ABing, right? I was running my Panasonic 820 and my Zapiti, and there were movies that you were like, wow, there's just so much more information. But the Zapiti was doing a one for one. But then there were other times that the disc looked better. But what ended up happening was I was getting is because my 820, my Panasonic, was set up with the HDR optimizer. Okay, so it was actually lowering everything for my projector, and it was giving me a great example for me is the beginning of Harry Potter, that first scene. So on the HDR optimizer on, that opening scene of the first Harry Potter movie where they have the light posts, but it's a very dark scene. That looked beautiful. But through the Zapiti, I was getting some crushing going on in the blacker areas. The blend wasn't there. You were getting a little bit of black crushing going on because it was such a dark scene that my projector, my Sony, was having trouble with that. But so then on other scenes that were really nice in different movies, like Die Hard, for instance, that were fairly brighter, that looked better than it did on the Panasonic because the Zapiti was sending the full signal through and my projector was doing its job and it was putting out a great image because there wasn't a lot of shadow detail that I had to notice or anything was missing, right? So the optimizer was actually bringing that down on me. And what was happening is I was like, oh, I wasn't seeing all the detail I could get. It still looked great. But the Zapiti was giving me just that little bit more that I was like, wow. And it took me time to figure this stuff out. Well, add in the Lumigen. Well, that's doing everything for me. That's leveling the playing field on every piece I have, from Apple TV to my Panasonic to the Kaleidoscape to the Zapiti. So we're getting all the same image and the Lumigen's doing all the processing, taking all the workload off the projector. And that's that, you know, so you're getting you are literally getting the same image from everything. Okay. So, and let me explain that a little bit better. Not the same image, but the same capability. So everything is on an equal playing field. So like the Panasonic is no longer compressing or actually optimizing it. It's sending the full signal through. Kaleidoscape is sending the full signal through. My Apple TV is sending the full signal through. And then the Lumigen's doing all the same thing to everything. And then obviously the projector is just doing its job. So I feel like I'm better served in my environment to do a comparison here than I was previously, because more at that time, it was a comparison between what the Panasonic's doing, what is a PD's doing. Even if I didn't have the Lumigen now, it'd be like, I know there's an optimization setting on the Kaleidoscape that I could bring that down. So that would help. Okay. Like similar to the Panasonic. But I don't need to use that. So there's a lot of stuff going on. But basically, I'm getting the, you know, the full bandwidth, which, you know, if you have a JVC, those have the much better. They have a much better tone mapping and stuff than the Sonys do. Sonys do something a little bit better than the JVCs do. But that you don't necessarily need the Lumigen. But at the same time, I do believe that the Lumigen does a little bit more. It's like a JVC on steroids. And I don't know that from, I don't have a JVC, but I know people with JVCs that have a Lumigen. So these are the things that are going on. But when it comes to like the Batman, where we're getting a full, you know, you're using the full 100, almost the full 100 gigabyte disc for a 3-hour movie on 4K. And you're using almost, you know, it's identical pretty much, I guess, on the, because I don't know. I don't know what's on the disc. For all I know, they're using a 100 gigabyte disc, but it might only be a 70 gigabyte file. But I still don't see a difference. You see what I'm saying? So I think everything is going well. I think it looks great. I think the 4K disc on the Batman, it's, to be honest with you, it's my disc of the year. I still love Morbius, and I think that's fantastic in a different way, but I love the Batman movie more. But the Morbius disc, there'll be more on that in the future, but yeah. So that's my breakdown. That's the best I can do. And I wanted to give you a little background on my equipment too, just to give you an idea on how I'm seeing and what I'm seeing, whether you agree with me or not, that's up to you. And it's probably going to differ in your environment as well, whether it's a dedicated room, a living room, but I feel like, in my opinion, I feel like, you know, disc to Kaleidoscape, you can't go wrong there. I'm not even saying almost. I think they're the same. So let me know what you think, if you've done that comparison or not. And, you know, if you disagree with me and my equipment, my room, I've heard that before, but I love my room. I love my equipment. Doesn't mean I'm not going to change it, because I can't wait to change it. I really like what Ralph's got rocking there in his room. That looks really nice. So we're always upgrading. We're always looking for the next best thing, right? So let's have some fun with that. But yeah, if you want to be on the show, you want to come on the show, you want to argue with me face to face and tell me I'm all wrong. Nobody's ever done that, but you could. Excuse me. That got me excited. But you could. That would be fun. It would be fun. Absolutely would be fun. But yeah. All you got to do is email me at brightsidehometheater@gmail.com, or you can DM me on Twitter at brightsidehT. Set it up. We've got some fun stuff coming up. I've got people are literally coming out of the woodwork. They're like, hi, I'd like to be on your show, but I'm not sure, blah, blah, blah. Great. I'm loving it. I'm getting people from literally all over the world. Very excited about that. More and more people from all over the world coming forward. And I think I got something special set up for next week as well. Another Brightside HT first coming up for next week's Takeover Tuesday. Can't wait for that. Another thing that I thought of but didn't think was going to happen, but it is. I think it is happening. Very excited for that. So yeah, everybody have a great week. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you for all of the support. Patreon.com/brightsidehometheater. You guys know the drill. Follow me on Twitter, all that fun stuff. Just keep the conversation going. Doesn't have to be with me. Let's just talk home theater. But you know what the best thing to do? The best thing to talk about when you start these conversations? You just talk about the stuff that, you know, you just went and push play. So go push play.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey, Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.